You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to episode number 316 of Locked On Raptors for Tuesday, April 16th. It's Monday, never mind. Monday, April 16th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of LockedOnRaptors.com and RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean. Find the show at Locked On Raptors, where you can find links to every single episode. Of course, make sure right now you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network, team-focused shows for all 30 NBA teams, local experts on all the teams still in the playoffs. After the first weekend, make sure you're checking out if there's a series that tickles your fancy, make sure you check out the corresponding shows on the network. There's Locked On NBA. Josh Lloyd hosted it last night, dove into some of the coach firings over the last week or so with the Knicks and Magic. And Locked On NBA with David Locke. All so much stuff going on in the network, so make sure you're checking it out. If you find a show that you like, make sure you subscribe, rate, review. If you find Locked On Raptors, please do that. It takes no time at all. It's the best way to help out the show. Show that you care. It takes 5 seconds, and it really does help move us up the rankings. I saw Locked On Raptors in the top 50 today in the Canadian iTunes charts, so please keep doing that. It's very helpful. It makes us more visible, and thanks in advance. All right, on today's show. Yesterday's show, we kind of dove very much into the Raptors angle of Game 1, so I wanted to kind of get the Wizards' perspective on things. So to join me today, it's a return guest back for the first time in over a year from truthaboutit.net. It's Rashad Mobley. How's it going?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me. It's been too long.
It has been. It's nice to catch up. The Raptors, of course, are up 1-0 in this series. The Wizards, I don't know. I had a hard time sort of judging how they played in this game because I went in, I picked the Raptors in five. I thought just the full body of work this season suggested the Raptors were just a better team than the Wizards. But obviously there was some hope for the Wizards considering their talent and their sort of past playoff pedigree. I guess we can start with, having seen one game, has your outlook at all changed for what the Wizards can do in this series? Like, what was your mindset going in and how does maybe one game change based on what they did or didn't do in game one?
Well, I picked the Raptors in six. Mm-hmm. There were some things that I saw at the end of the year, at the end of the season for the Wizards, that I was worried that they would continue in against Toronto. I believe it was against the Celtics in the last week of one of the last games of the season, and I just noticed how the Celtics, even though the Wizards won, they just completely spread the Wizards out, and they were hitting threes everywhere, and mm-hmm. just. It concerned me that their recovery defense and just covering the perimeter was not there. And between that and Kelly Oubre kind of slumping with his shot, he hasn't been consistently hitting shots like he was earlier in the season. I mean, earlier in the season, Coach Brooks was so worried that he was getting carried away with offense that he kept stressing, we need Kelly Oubre to keep playing defense. Mm-hmm. Now he's not doing either one. Beal played more games and more minutes than he has at any point in his career. And you notice towards the end of the season, even when Wall was back, he's just running. He just looks a little run down. He doesn't have that other gear to go to. And up till this season, Beal was known as a playoff performer, but it was easier to do that when he didn't have to carry the load. So there were little things that I was worried about, and all of those little things came to play in game one. They weren't defending the three. I mean, as you know, C.J. Miles is a notorious Wizards killer. Even back when he was with Indiana, mm-hmm. some of those three-pointers he had time to eat a sandwich and, it was way too much time. I think you saw the lack of, Otto Porter was not 100%, mm-hmm. And neither was Mike Scott. I was surprised that they even played. So you can point to that. I mean, Wall played an excellent game. Most of his misses were layups, and so he won't do that in game two. But there's not a cohesiveness there that was there last year when they played so well in March and April. In fairness, John Wall was healthy that whole time, but that factors into how you think this team can do, and I did not see that a sustained cohesiveness. You saw it in bunches when it looked like Toronto was going to run away, especially in the second and third quarters. John Wall made it his business to keep the team in the game, but there just was a certain inevitability there that you just knew DeRozan wasn't going to stay cold. Like, the Raptors were not going to stay cold as a team, and that's what happened. So you're often way more pessimistic when you cover the team and when you look at them every day and you mm-hmm. just notice all the flaws and you're very reluctant to kind of give the team some credit. But I don't see anything changing short of Waller Beal having a James Harden game or Otto Porter or Kelly Oubre kind of breaking out of it and having a good game. And I don't see that happening. So I wrote before game one that I thought it was huge for both teams, not just for Toronto because they had to shake off the ghosts of the past, but it's very important for the Wizards too because despite how they finished the season, one good game on the road, all of a sudden everything goes away. You have a confidence, and now you have to worry about it's not paranoia, it's doubt going to creep in. Is somebody going to start playing hero ball? You just have to worry about all that. So that was a long answer, but that's a long way of saying, yes, I'm a little concerned because what we saw in game one is the same thing we saw the last week of the season out of the Wizards.
Yeah, good points all. The Bradley Beal thing's interesting to me, that you mentioned he's kind of wearing down. That's like essentially what happened in the series in 2015 from the Raptors side of things. You know, DeMar DeRozan missed 21 games that year. Kyle Lowry sort of carried the day. And then by the end of the year, he just was not the same guy. I think he was just more banged up than maybe Bradley Beal is right now. And Bradley Beal, I think, still scares me more than any other Wizard. But that's interesting that that's kind of a parallel to draw back to 2015. You mentioned John Wall. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's funny you mentioned that because when Toronto was in D.C. and somebody from the Toronto media asked if there were parallels between what the Wizards were doing without Wall and what Toronto had done, as you mentioned, and he said all these people talking about the Wizards don't need John Wall are crazy because when we had our run, we started off beautifully and then we kind of came back to earth, the adrenaline wore off, and we weren't the same team. And this was while the Wizards were still rolling and everybody was eating and everybody was contemplating whether the Wizards were better without Wall. And shortly after that conversation with Dwayne Casey, the Wizards just started coming back to earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's funny you brought up those parallels because Dwayne Casey had that exact same observation when he was in town.
As it turns out, these two teams are constructed very similarly, and I feel like things like a long-term injury to one of the stars would probably have a similar effect. You mentioned Wall and how he had like a pretty good game. The second quarter, I thought he was excellent. He was kind of picking apart the Raptors' defense, and I thought they kind of leveraged the attention they were playing to Bradley Beal off the ball into sort of getting some looks for Otto Porter. Porter didn't have a great game or anything, only shot 7 times, but I think most of those looks came in the second quarter sort of as an offshoot of all the attention being paid to Beal, and Wall was really good at picking that apart. What did you think of Wall's game as a whole, though? Because, like, around the rim, yeah, he was, like, what, 2 of 10 around the rim? That's not going to happen every time. At the same time, the Raptors were the number 2 team in protecting the rim this season, and I feel like they're probably okay with John Wall kind of, you know, it felt like in that fourth quarter, and maybe this speaks to sort of their issues in the fourth quarter this season as a whole. They've been one of the worst fourth quarter teams, period. It kind of felt like Wall was looking for guys, but he wasn't exactly sort of, you know, it wasn't a healthy sort of offense. It was him holding the ball for 15 seconds and then trying to find like a one single pass for an assist. And it wasn't sort of breaking down the Raptors the way, say, maybe the Raptors defense was breaking apart the Wizards, where, you know, it was sort of, you know, drive after drive. There were a couple possessions where they would get it inside, kick it out, and there was multiple drives and resets, eventually winding up with threes. I think that DeLon Wright three near the end of regulation kind of was the main example of that. And that was just not really present for the Wizards. There were no possessions like that where the ball was kind of pinging around. Is there, like, does Wall inherently kind of bring down the crunch time ceiling of this team as opposed to if Beal was kind of, you know, being asked to carry more of a creation load late in games?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I hate to go back to the end of the regular season, but
yeah, no worries.
When Scott Brooks was asked to kind of to assess the limited sample size that John Wall came back to play in, and he said, I like John, he's in shape. You know, I'm not worried about him being in shape or him getting tired, but I want him to be a little more decisive on offense. If he's going to pass the ball, make the easy pass. Don't make the all-star pass. And if you're going to shoot the ball, go to the rim and go strong. Don't kind of get what I like to call the Allen Iverson assist, where you exhaust all options of scoring, and then you jump in the air and on the way down, just hope somebody bails you out.
Right.
You know, he was doing a lot of that towards the end of the year. And it just kind of spilled over into the game. He had stretches where he was running, he was playing with pace, and everything, particularly in those second and third quarters where the Wizards were rolling. But in crunch time, it was a problem when Wall, before the injury, it was definitely a problem when Beal was running the show. Beal is not a crunch time player.
Mm-hmm.
He misses throws. He's not decisive with his passes, and it was just bad. And now that Wall is back, I'm not going to say that he brings them down. He's just not comfortable yet.
Right.
I mean, I think all you have to look back at is last postseason, the Wizards against the Hawks and against the Celtics, even though they lost, John Wall in the offense was in a rhythm. You know, there was a rhythm to what he did. He came down on a pick and roll, found Gortat cutting to the basket. Next time he came down, got to the basket, as you alluded to, broke down the defense, found Otto Porter on one side or Beal on the other side. He was in a rhythm. And the stats from the work in game one lie a little bit because he was in a rhythm in pockets, but when it got to that fourth quarter, it kind of regressed to one-on-one ball. I mean, Otto Porter wasn't exactly burning it up, and neither was Bradley Beal. So I think, you know, Wall needs to find a rhythm, but he also needs to get some outside shooting help. And that's, again, that goes back to Kelly Oubre. When the Wizards are on and Kelly Oubre and Beal and Otto Porter are hot from the outside, it's amazing how much the lane opens up and how much better Wall looks. But right now, it's just, it's not there. And I wonder when Coach, you know, obviously I'm not on the road, I'm not talking to Coach Brooks, but I just wondered if you're going to tweak the offense at all. Mm-hmm. Because right now it just looks like, and you probably feel the same way, I feel like every game of this series can go exactly the way game one went, where the Raptors establish a lead, the Wizards hang around, they take a slight lead in the fourth quarter, the bench and the Raptors are just too much. And if you had asked me that last year, I wouldn't have felt like that. I felt like there was another gear the Wizards had. I don't see it now. So I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that Wall is able to kind of establish that rhythm and get a little help. But right now, it just doesn't look like that. And granted, as we talked about before, he missed a lot of easy shots that he normally doesn't miss. Normally, when he gets to the rim, regardless of who the rim protector is in the other team, he's either scoring or he's getting to the line. He's not just missing and not getting any calls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned maybe Scott Brooks trying to tweak the offense a bit. There are a few things that I think Scott Brooks probably needs to work on going forward, because I thought he got out coached by Casey pretty handily in game one. Casey, I think, kind of turned the right knobs at the right time. The Bebe substitution in the fourth quarter in particular, putting Kyle in place of Norman Powell with the all-bench unit to start the fourth, I think kind of blew that whole thing open. And that's, you probably expect that. And maybe, you know, if you look at, you know, when the Raptors had Fred VanVleet back, the second quarter, where I think the biggest misstep by Scott Brooks that kind of went unpunished, but I don't think it will, you know, going forward, was Brooks had four straight minutes from the end of the first quarter into the start of the second where all of Beal, Wall, and Porter were on the bench. And I know this is a thing Scott Brooks has done, both with OKC and the Wizards, having his best players all on the bench at once. I didn't think we'd see it in the playoffs in particular, especially with this Wizards team, you know, A, being banged up a little bit, and B, just not being super deep, you know, even when healthy. But we saw that, and the Raptors were only a plus one in that situation because Fred VanVleet wasn't in there. It was Norman Powell, and that lineup just doesn't have a whole lot of offensive juice. But when Fred's there, that lineup has been well documented. They just blitz teams, and I feel like if Scott Brooks does it again and Fred VanVleet's back for game two or game three or somewhere else in the series, that's going to be a part in the game where instead of the Wizards having a big 36-27 second quarter, they could get off to the wrong foot. The Raptors kind of blow it open. And that's been the formula for the Raptors for most of this year. So what do you think? Are there ways Brooks can kind of tweak the rotation, do you think, to sort of keep his best players on the court at all time? Or are you expecting this to just be a thing that he's going to live with and continue throughout the series?
Well, there's a couple things at play here. And one, I'll defer to my colleague, Ben Standig, who you probably know. You do a lot just podcast, and he discussed in his piece that what happened in game one, particularly in that second quarter, was a product of the Wizards not addressing wing depth. Mm-hmm. They went out and got Ty Lawson, another point guard, and the assumption there is that Thomas Satoransky can play some wing. Well, that's not his strength. I mean, he kind of cut his teeth this year being the point guard when John Wall wasn't there. And so, you know, if you don't have wing depth and your two wings, Mike Scott and Otto Porter, aren't exactly playing well, it forced Scott Brooks into this weird thing where instead of doing what he should do, which is take Waller Beal out with about three or four minutes left in the first quarter, put Satoransky in, and then when the second quarter starts, you can have Satoransky running the court, you can have Beal in, and he can stagger Wall and Beal in a way that they never leave the court. Mm-hmm. Much like he did in Oklahoma City, when he always had Durant or Westbrook on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Wizards Twitter was blowing up with that exact observation. Like, what is he doing? Why is he doing that now? And the Raptors bench is arguably the strength of the team. And the lineup that he had out there was just not cutting it. Now, of course, you know, wall caught fire later on in the quarter, and it didn't burn them too much. But Scott Brooks' rotations are not airtight as they should be. Some of that is due to injury. Some of that is due to, I mean, you can even look at something as small as Jody Meeks being suspended. Mm-hmm. You know, Jody was always one of those, you put him in for a few minutes, he can hit some shots here and there, but if he's not, you take him out. Now you don't have that option. Now you don't have a healthy Mike Scott or Otto Porter. So I want to give him a little bit of a pass because he didn't know literally until the tip-off whether he was going to have Scott and Porter. And once they were out there, Mike Scott played well, but Otto didn't. Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe going into this game, he'll know exactly what he's going to get out of the players who play. He can tweak the rotation a little bit. But that's not something he did very often this season, having when Wall and Beal were available, having both of them on the bench. Because it's just not, it's not a good look. One of them needs to be on the floor. And again, it's not as big of a deal. It used to be when Wall came out, he would put Bradley Beal at the point guard, and which would kind of nullify what Brad Beal does so well, which is cutting and running and coming off screens. Mm-hmm. Now he has Satoransky. I mean, Satoransky has played almost more than half the season without Wall. So I didn't see that lineup enough. And to your point, when Van Vliet comes back, that absolutely needs to be the case because that bench is only going to get better within minutes. They're not going to regress.
One other lineup thing I want to touch on before I let you go here. Mike Scott and Markieff Morris were kind of thrust into being the front court after both Gortat and Mahinmi picked up pretty quick fouls. Mahinmi never came into the game after that in the first quarter. And it was okay. Like, the main lineup they used, it was 7 minutes. It was Beal, Wall, Porter, Morris, Scott. They were a plus 1.9 net rating in 7 minutes, so who knows. But I did kind of fear that, you know, if you're, this cuts both ways, because the Raptors in the past have kind of struggled against stretchier front courts where you go Morris and Scott. But at the same time, I feel like Morris Scott is small enough and maybe not quite stretchy enough that, you know, eventually an Ibaka Valanciunas front court, especially with Ibaka rebounding the way he was, is probably going to eventually kind of make their presence known. And, you know, the rebounding was pretty decent for the Wizards in those minutes, but I feel like eventually that could be, you know, a pretty big problem if that was to be played out over a longer sample. But at the same time, like, Gortat was not particularly effective. The starters were not effective. They were a minus 29.4 net rating in their 18 minutes. Like, what do you think is the play here for Scott Brooks in terms of balancing small ball versus, you know, traditionally having one of their centers? Because they played most of the season with one of Mahinmi or Gortat at center, but I don't know. It didn't really work out for them in game one. Is there, you know, an adjustment there? Maybe they go small a little bit more often. What do you think is going through Scott Brooks' mind right now?
Well, it doesn't. I mean, Gortat does not play well once Valanciunas leaves the floor. I mean, he cannot get out there and guard Ibaka. I mean, it's just the Raptors have the kind of lineup that can expose all of Gortat's weaknesses. And so, when Valanciunas came off the floor, I expected to see Mahinmi, and I also expected to see the lineup that Scott Brooks used a little, where he put Morris at the five, Porter at the four. Mm-hmm. Then he'll have Wall, Beal, and Oubre, and he didn't show that lineup. But the rebounding is a big key, and I just don't think that, number one, well, let me go back. Markieff Morris is always a risk to put in at five, because sometimes he gets in his own head. He gets fouls and punches, he starts barking at the refs, and then he just gets completely taken out of the game. Mm-hmm. Normally he does a good job against athletic bigs, but for whatever reason, he wasn't in there either. So, again, it speaks to the inconsistency with Scott Brooks. I don't know what he can do. I do know when Wall and Gortat are together, regardless of what goes on the defensive end of the floor, if Gortat gets a few extra layups, dunks in the beginning, he becomes a more motivated, active player. With Mahinmi, it's the same way. If you can get him on the break and the Wizards are running, he becomes more active on the defensive end of the floor. So, you know, that might be the key. But one of the reasons why I wanted Boston and not Toronto is the front court and how Ibaka has the kind of game that drives the Wizards crazy. They don't really have anybody who can defend him comfortably. Mm-hmm. And Valanciunas, when he gets on a roll, can get Gortat in foul trouble. He can get Mahinmi in foul trouble. So I don't have, I mean, again, I sound pessimistic here, but I don't have confidence that Brooks has the magic elixir to stop that. This is a different team than it was in 2015, and you all just have so many different options with which to beat the Wizards, and the Wizards right now, as currently constructed, don't seem to be able to combat that.
Rashad, man, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sort of shedding light on kind of the Wizards side of things. Definitely, you're more pessimistic than I thought you would be, but I guess game one kind of, maybe you felt this too. It was an 8-point game. I kind of felt like the Raptors for the most of the game, aside from that second quarter, kind of felt like they were in control. I'm interested to see what's going to happen in game two. There are definitely some moves to be made from Scott Brooks. It's weird being someone who covers the Raptors and not really worrying about in-between game adjustments right now, because the Raptors are usually always down 0-1 and have to make some sort of drastic change. Not the case right now. So thanks so much for coming on, man, and shedding some light on what the Wizards might do. Where can people find you, and do you have anything you'd like to plug right now?
I'm at truthaboutit.net. My Twitter handle is Rashad20. I will be working on something tonight that will be up tomorrow. Just, going to do a little deeper dive on the game before the next one. And I hope I didn't come off as too pessimistic. But, at the same time, when you look at the box score and DeRozan and Lowry combined for 28 points and the Wizards still lose by 8, it's not a good feeling. It reminds me of that last night's game, the Houston Timberwolves game, where it felt like a blowout. And every time you looked at the score, Minnesota was right there, but you never really felt like Minnesota was going to take over and win.
Right.
That's how I felt about Wizards Raptors. So I'm hoping I'm wrong. Hopefully at some point you have me back on the podcast and I can have a much more sunny outlook on things.
Absolutely, man. We'll definitely do it again sometime. Thanks so much for coming on. Thanks to the listeners for tuning in. The next podcast will come from the ACC after Game 2 on Tuesday night, so stay tuned for that. And until then, I wrote today a piece on RaptorsHQ.com. I compared Dwayne Casey's post-game presser from Game 1 of last year's series against the Bucks with his post-game presser from Game 1 this year against the Wizards. Things done change, so go read about that. And thanks so much for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time on Locked on Raptors.